We want to give a big shkoyach to Rabbi Rabinowitz for coming here tonight. Also in a neighborhood known as the Manastra to Rebbe. And a grace to grace to Dan. We appreciate it. Kasher's coordinator for the OU. Shkoyach, thank you so much.
So firstly, shkoyach for this this invite to come and address you. Baruch Hashem, I see it's a beautiful item. I imagine this will continue through the summer. Mitz Hashem, it's a beautiful thing that you're coming to Beis Medrash to come and sit and learn the Ritzar. It's the Indian that we're going to speak about tonight, which is really the kashrus of liquor products, is something which has somewhat of a makar in this week's Sedra. Because Parshas Balak, of course, at the end, you know, the beginning, we all know about the flowery, poetic nevuah of Bilam. But at the end of the Parsha, he does a tremendous disservice to Klal Yisrael, in Arvas Moyav, is where he causes Klal Yisrael to sin. And what's interesting is that one of the main issues, it's not the only, but we'll see, but one of the main issues is Stam Yenam. Because there are many intersections between liquor and Stam Yenam. And who made the Gzeira of Stam Yenam? Where does it come from? Stam Yenam means not Yain Netzach, wine that was used for Avodah Zarah, but just any wine from a non-Jew is forbidden. You know who made that Gzeira? What?
Rabbanan.
But more specifically, the Pirkei Reb Lezer says it was Pinchas. And you know when Pinchas made the Gzeira? He made it in Arvas Moyav. Pinchas is next to the following week, Sedra. He's the one, of course, who... Because what did Bilam do? He got Klal Yisrael to sin by being together with the Benois Moyav. And how does one cause social interaction that causes to elicit types of relationships? That's done with wine. Because that's the people engage socially with people over a bottle of wine. And over a Suda. And that's where the Gzeira of Stam Yenam comes from. It didn't actually become halacha until maybe 1,000 years later, but the Pirkei Reb Lezer says it actually started with Pinchas. Now, the kashrus of liquor products, which is the way it was announced, is a little boring. So I wanted to talk maybe about Jews who schmooze about booze, which is... And the reality is that... we're going to talk about booze, not the way the Goyim talk about booze. Because when they talk about booze, they talk about, you know, how old is it, and what does it taste like, and most importantly, what does it do to get me where I want to be. But when we talk about booze, we talk about something else. We talk about the halachic ramifications of that. And that's what I'd like to spend a little bit of time tonight, Mirtz Hashem, doing. So the first thing is, what is alcohol? Now, in order to deal with shilas, you have to know the metzias. You have to know what the facts are. So let's talk about the facts. What is alcohol? So in order to start to get alcohol, you need something called sugar. You start with sugar, you add something called yeast. What is yeast? Yeast is a bacteria. It's microscopic. You don't see it. Yes, when you buy brewer's yeast or you buy Fleischmann's yeast in the grocery store to make challah, it's bacteria which is grown on something. Which, because you have to, because bacteria is, it's hard to sort of use and to move and to deal with, so it's grown on something, but there's real bacteria there. And that's why it's often kept frozen, or it's in a dried state so that it's inactive. And what happens is, by putting it in the right conditions, it becomes active. If you take sugar and you mix yeast with it, what you'll end up with is alcohol and CO2. CO2, of course, is carbon dioxide, which is a byproduct of making alcohol. Now, typically, the soda that you're drinking does not have carbon dioxide, which comes from beer or from other fermentations. It's usually derived from other sources, which has some relevance for Pesach. Because if they were to derive the carbon dioxide from beer, some would say, I'm not saying that's halacha, but some would say that you shouldn't drink that such a soda on Pesach. But that's just an agav. What is the first alcoholic beverage? If we go back to, there was someone by the name of Noach, you may have heard of him, and he gets out of the teva, he goes and he makes yain. maybe he had a little help to do it more quickly than usual. But that's really what it is, because grapes have sugar in them. Grapes are one of the most potent sugar sources that exist. What's also interesting is that the Rabbanu Shlomo made the skin of the grape with yeast on it. So you have all the raw materials. Once you crush the grape and you have juice, and you have that sugar coming out, you have the yeast right there. It engages, and it's going to convert. The sugar is going to convert into... So the steps, basically, for grapes, you take a harvest, you take your grapes, you'll crush them so that you have juice coming out, you have your sugar there, you have your yeast, and that's the fermentation, which normally takes place in a tank, which is converting the sugar. That's why when you make wine, it's no longer sweet. Because what happens is the sugar converts into alcohol. And for those who are diabetics, we have to avoid sugar. Alcohol doesn't help you because your body metabolizes alcohol exactly the way it does sugar. So it doesn't help anybody who has to avoid sugar. But be that as it may, after that they're going to press it to remove all of the foreign substances, the skins and the seeds and everything else. They're going to age it for a while. They're going to filter it to finish it up and bottle it. And that's the bottle of wine that you get. Now you ask me the question, if wine by definition is dry, is not sweet, so how do you have sweet wine? So the answer is either you stop the fermentation before it finished, or you're dealing with a very sweet sugar, a very sweet wine, very sweet grape, so that there's a lot of sugar, and even after it finishes fermentation, you have what's called residual sugar, or what you did is you added something sweet to it, like naturally sweetened, or otherwise you're adding something, because wine otherwise would be not a sweet beverage. Continuing, what will fermentation do? Fermentation is going to take, and here's just examples of certain things which have alcohol. A can of beer typically has about 4 or 5% alcohol. If you have something like a malt liquor, or if you have something like cider, it'll go up to 7, maybe 8%. A bottle of wine will have about 12, 13, sometimes even a little bit higher than that. There's something called fortified wine. That's something you've ever heard of, something called sherry, or something called port. That's wine, but they add alcohol to it to bring it up even higher. So that's going to go up to 17% or 20% or 22%. Then you have liqueurs, which is essentially alcohol mixed with flavors and sweeteners. And that can be higher because you're starting out with a pure alcohol. We'll get to how you get up to above, the typical 15, 17%. You have, of course, a brandy, cognac, or of course, scotch or whiskey, which are 40%. And the question is, how do you get that? Because what happens is, once the alcohol starts, getting to 15, 16%, the alcohol, which is an antiseptic, is going to kill the bacteria. So the bacteria, which is causing fermentation, is eventually going to die because of the alcohol that it created. So that's just in terms of the chemistry. But how do you get it higher? You do something called distillation. Now, anybody who learned chemistry back in high school or wherever knows that the boiling point of water is 212 degrees Fahrenheit, right? Or 100 degrees centigrade. What is the boiling point of alcohol? It's lower. It will actually, it's 78 centigrade, or about 172 Fahrenheit. So what you do is you start to cook it. What's going to happen, you cook up this mixture, which is the wine, and what's going to happen is the alcohol, which is in it, is going to turn into a vapor. It boils, but the rest of the liquid doesn't boil. And you lift up that vapor, and then you capture it, and then cool it, so that it turns back from vapor state back into a liquid state. That's what you've done, is you've separated the alcohol from the product. What you're doing is you're taking something which is 15% alcohol, 18% alcohol, and you can take it all the way up to 96% alcohol. You can't go higher than 96% alcohol. Anybody know what that's called in Yiddish? Zechsenneinzig, right. So the story is told that there was a Yid that after davening every day, he used to drink Zechsenneinzig every day. And then when he got older, he wasn't feeling well. He went to the doctor. So he comes to the doctor, and the doctor says, you have water on your lungs. So he says, I always knew that 4% was going to get to But that's 96%. Most of what you'll buy is, let's say, vodka. It's a neutral spirit. So they take it up to 95%, 96%, but then what they do is they add water to it to knock it down again, because most people don't enjoy 96% alcohol. Some people do, but this is how you make alcohol. Now, if you're starting with sugar, so let's say rum. Anybody, I don't know if anybody likes rum. It's not so popular in our circles. But there are very expensive rums. Rum starts with sugar. It starts with cane sugar or molasses, which is from sugar. So there's natural sugar there. You ferment it, you distill it, you age it, and you bottle it. That's what rum is. Something else that starts from sugar is something called tequila. That, I think, is today very popular. Tequila starts with agave. It's a type of fruit that grows in the desert of Guadalajara, that area. And you crush it, you bake it, and you crush it, and you extract the sugar from it. Then you do the same process. You add the yeast, you ferment it, then you sometimes age it. You know, the añejo is right, it's aged, or absado, or if you have the blanc, which is the white, which is typically not aged. That's what tequila is. Now, everybody's going to ask me, if you need to start with sugar, so let's just see. So what could be the problem? Sugar is sugar is sugar. You know, what kind of kashrus problems could there be? So let's take a look and see some of the... I'm going to skip this because it's not so relevant. What are common sources for sugar? So cane sugar is a source that's pretty innocuous. Beet sugar is pretty innocuous. Agave, we mentioned, tequila. Honey is a source of sugar. Med is a wine which is made from honey. Grapes are a source of sugar. That could be a problem because we know that wine, like Pinchas was geyser, right? Even if it's not abused from the bazaar, can be a very serious problem. Apples can be a source of sugar. If you've heard of hard apple cider, they're very popular. That's a source of sugar. Pears can be a source of sugar. Maple syrup, which comes from the tree, is a source of sugar. But there's something else which also can be... Milk has sugar in it. It's called lactose. And some people are lactose intolerant because for some reason they don't digest the lactose properly because of certain enzymes. But the milk could be a source. And for example, a country like New Zealand, where they have such an abundance of milk, they will make vodka from lactose. More, you know, today everybody's into these beers, right? You have all these microbreweries. Now, the microbreweries are interesting. Just yesterday I was up in upstate, not far from Rochester, in a cider facility. They like to play around with all these things. And it's very popular today to make beer, which starts with, you know, with barley, but they add lactose to it, they add flavors to it, they do all, everyone wants to, you know, make their product something different, unique. So what they do is they'll add, so lactose, it can be a serious, there's a brewery that I work with, they wanted to add lactose, I said, okay, goodbye, we're out of here, because once you start adding lactose, you start having issues with kalem, and we're not going to give a milk a beer, it's just doesn't go.
It doesn't get converted to sugar.
It does get converted, but it's based on, if you have a vodka, vodka can be so pure and pristine because it's, you know, distilled up to 96%. It tastes like neutral spirit, but it's milk. But it's milk. The sword, it's not just tam. The etzem came from milk. I mean, yes, it's maybe only Midrabanan, it's Mecholov, it's not considered Mamash Cholov, but Midrabanan, it certainly is Milchiks. We have to treat it like Milchiks. So these are issues that come up. A lot of these microbreweries and micro distilleries play around, and even some of the big distilleries are also playing around and doing all kinds of things. And one of the difficult things that you have with liquor and beer and wines is that look for an ingredient statement on a label. You're not going to find it. For some reason, the TTB does not require ingredient statements. So as much as, you know, you have a basic idea, yes, you can't always determine kashrus from an ingredient statement. We generally discourage that because there's, like, flavors can mean a lot of different things and spices can mean a lot of different things. But when it comes to wine, there's nothing to look at. There's just no ingredient statement. Some, I think, there's no nutrition statement either. Imagine if you knew how many calories were in the... be discouraged, but for some reason the governments don't require that. So anyway, this is why even something which is a sugar based can be from various types of sugar. So you have to know what's the source of the sugar. And if you're not, you may have heard there's a vodka from France called Ciroc. So Ciroc is like this ultra, I don't know how many ultras you put before the word premium by the vodka, but for some reason, that's a grape-based vodka. It tastes like vodka. It's, you know, it tastes like, vodka's basically tasteless. I mean, I'm not going to argue, you know, people like vodka and whatever, but it's basically, it's tasteless. It doesn't have the taste. You're not going to taste the grapes there, but it's grapes. That's wine. If it's wine, it's awesome. So that's clearly the case. The bracha would be like, you know, anything which is yotze, it's no longer the form of what where originally came from. So it would be, I mean, even your sugar, it comes from a cane sugar or beets, but it's true, would probably be adama in its original form, but once it's already in the form that you get it, it's probably shakel. Now, whiskey, we know, is all from grain, or grain vodka is from grain. Now, problem with grain is it doesn't have sugar, so how do you make alcohol if you don't have sugar? The answer is starches, which are in these grains, do convert into sugar under the right conditions. So if you take, let's say, a malted grain, and then you will put it in hot water, it's a mashing process, you'll convert that into sugar. Then you have the sugar, let's go make some alcohol. That's basically how that works. Now, the process for making whiskey is, yes, you're going to take the grains, you're going to grind it, you're going to mash it like we spoke, you're going to ferment it by adding yeast to it, you're going to distill it, age it, and bottle it. That's the process for making whiskey, basically. Now, what are the common sources of starch? And this is relevant for another very important matter when it comes to liquor, is Pesach. Because on Pesach, we don't eat chametz. And we don't just have a problem with Pesach chametz, but we have a problem if a Jew owned chametz on Pesach, we have a problem even after Pesach. So the common sources are, in the United States, the most common is corn. And that's actually very, very good for us, because a lot of materials that would be in Europe, potentially chametz, in America are rarely chametz, because corn is so abundant and cheap. So they just use it as a starter material for a lot of different things. Most alcohol in this country is based on corn. But it can be from wheat, rye, rice, oats. All of those would be chametz, actual chametz. If you have alcohol from corn, like, tell you a secret, Smirnoff vodka, it's corn, it's no wheat. It's fine. It's. And again, eats kidney as we wouldn't eat it on Pesach, but drink it on Pesach, but it's not chametz of our love of Pesach. If it's something like potatoes, which was a traditional Polish recipe for vodka, and yes, they know how to make vodka, that could be actually kosher Pesach. Of course, you have to make sure the yeast is kosher Pesach also. The yeast was grown on chametz, that could be a problem. There's an interesting plant which is called sorghum, where they actually make whiskey from it. Now, that could be kidneyous or not. Depends. The sorghum plant, which grows to be about 10 feet tall, the stalk is like cane sugar. It has actual sugar in it. The top has seeds which are starchy. So it could be not kidneyous or it could be kidneyous, depending on where you're getting it from the sorghum. Some are cultivated for the starch and some are cultivated for the sugar. So depending on what part of the sorghum you're getting, it could be yes, kidneyous or not kidneyous. So that's why that's somewhat nondescript. Now, chametz shor lePesach. You leave chametz in your possession or another Jew's possession, and you didn't eat it, but you were over on two lavim, layirah, right? And layimatzah. You're not allowed to have it in your possession, this chametz. So it's aser. So the halacha is that if you have chametz, which was in your possession or any Jew's possession, is aser ba'ana, you cannot not just eat it, you cannot even benefit from it. And even if this was a mistake, and I'll tell you a story. The Stechemet is one, it's like the encyclopedia of halacha. It was written about 150 years ago. There was a woman whose husband passed away, and he was, as many Eden were and still are, in the liquor business. And he passed away, they didn't have children, and she yarshened his liquor business. And no one told her that before Pesach, you have to do a mechiras chametz. So here she's got, you know, invested tremendous amount of money in liquor, And Pesach goes by, and then someone wakes up and says, did you make a Mechiras Chametz? She says, nope, no one ever told me to do Mechiras Chametz. So what do you do for this woman? So this was a shayla that the Seichem had sent to the Malbim. Unfortunately, the Malbim never got the shayla, because the Malbim was a rav in many shul, in many kehillas. He had moved on from that, and there was no forwarding address. So it was a shayla the Malbim never responded to. But trying to find an etza for this woman, so there are a couple of etzas which could be relevant for b'dievet situations. The first question is like this. There's a concept in halacha of zeya. If something became a vapor, zeya is vapor, does it maintain its original state? Or do we say since it was in, let's say, liquid state or solid state, and now it became a vapor, so it's like air. So we say that it changed. So the halacha is, Shulchan Aruch, is that something which turns into a vapor, if it was yayin, which is asur b'hana, so then it remains, it was because of the halacha of avodah zarah, and even if you mamish burnt it into a ash, it retains its isur, because in isur hana remains. So zeh doesn't help for that. But it seems, and this is a famous tshuva of the Mishkanes Yaakov, Mishnas Yaakov says that if you take something which is chametz, but you turn it into a vapor, it's no longer considered like it was in its original state, you're not chametz anymore. So this is one of the applications, and this, I mean, for example, maybe 2 years ago, they found that one of the biggest distributors of beer in this tri-state area was a Jew who didn't make a mechiras chametz. And it was a whole tumult about beer and for a good extended period after Pesach. A lot of people recommended not buying Budweiser and all the famous beers and popular beers because he controlled a lot of the market. I think since then he's done a Mechiras Chametz. There were shyness of how to do the Mechiras Chametz because, you know, again, if you have Mechiras Chametz but you basically do the formality but you don't observe it in any way, then there's a question of whether that's an effective Mechiras Chametz. But even leaving that aside, beer, of course, is easy in some ways because, you know, beer doesn't last that long. Many people say, you know, skunky beer, leave it for a little bit. But wine, you know, will live on longer. And liquor just lives on and on and on and on. And liquor, you can have a liquor which was bottled or aged 20 years ago, and it's still around. So that, you know, even if one Pesach, somewhere in between, it was a Bereshus of Yisrael, that could be a shiloh. Again, if I don't know, suffix, there may be makom lahakel, but it's a concept that people should be aware of. There's another tshuva, the Balatanya wrote, of course, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, but the Hagoy is there from his brother, and he writes a different svarim. There's a concept in halacha, to be over on Bal Yirah Bar Yimatzei, it has to be a shear of chametz, toich kedei achilas pras, right? That you have to be able to eat it within, if you have a taruvas chametz, which is a mixture with just a little bit of chametz, and you wouldn't eat it, whatever that number is, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever the number is, so that's not considered chametz, which you oyver bal yirah bar yimatzei. So he argued like this. This is all the b'dievet. He argued, since schnapps is something you don't drink quickly, you can't just, guzzle it. You drink it slowly. Since you drink it slowly, it's not something that would have a shear of chametz toich kedei achilas pras. So therefore, that was another snif lahakel. The Seichem had tried to help out this poor woman, maybe she wasn't so poor, but she was going to become poor very quickly. This is another of the things that he was trying. Now, one of the questions that comes up is bourbon. Now we know scotch is chametz because it's made from barley, right? Malted barley, that's chametz. 100%, except for yester, b'dievet, your zeya, and maybe basically it's chametz. But bourbon, the halacha, as based on the rules of bourbon, are that bourbon has to be made in the United States. It doesn't have to be made in Kentucky. Yes, Kentucky straight bourbon has to be made in Kentucky. But bourbon does not need to be made. You can have bourbon made in every. But one of the halachas of bourbon is that it must be 51% corn. And the reason is because that gives it a unique flavor. Many bourbons are 70%, maybe are 80%, 60%, the way they blend it. And then they mix in some rye, they mix in some wheat, they may mix in some malted barley, each one, with his unique formula, because You know, they want you to buy their product. So here what you have is something which is chametz, partially, but it's roiv is not. What's the halacha in such a case? So normally we say, chametz over la pesach is a knas, the rabbanan. What happened? It's not bal yira now. It's a chametz. It was in the hands of a Jew over Pesach. It's no longer in the hands of the Jew. So what about now? So we say, usually we say, but the bitl b'shishim is the standard, you know, rule of thumb. Here we say bitl b'roif. As long as you have the majority, not chametz, then you don't have to be concerned. So l'chara, we can close our eyes, take any bourbon, because of just the makeup of the way bourbon is made, and we say we don't have any worries with respect to that. There's only, and that's in fact what many rabbanim. There was a tumult that was, I think, in maybe about 8, maybe 9 years ago, that came out about bourbon, because what they found was, and we'll get to this a little bit later, some of the big bourbon makers are Jewish owned, and some of them make a mechiras chametz, but some don't make a mechiras chametz. So they put out these lists, and they said all of those from this distillery and from that distillery, you should avoid using. Now the question is why? If it's bourbon, so then it's a roiv which is not chametz. If it's a roiv which is not chametz, so the chara we have bitl b'roiv. But the problem is like this. I'm sorry?
Isn't chametz also mashu?
Yes, that's in terms of on Pesach. But here we're talking about after Pesach. There's no issur to eat chametz after Pesach. It's only what Chazal made gzeirah that said, since you were a bad boy, and since you owned it on Pesach, you were over to Lavin, so we say it's Osir Bano, that's the Drabbanim. And the Drabbanim, when they made this gzeirah, they didn't say it's like other Yisurim, they said it. The question then is, do we say that it's min b'minah or min b'she'enu minah? Because that has relevance over here. Something which does not impart flavor, we would employ the rules of Bittul Baroi. But something that imparts flavor, and usually we say that less than 1 in 60 does not impart flavor, more than 1 in 60 does impart flavor, you can't use the bitl b'roif. So Rav Belsi Tzatzal argued that since you have corn, but you also have rye, and rye and corn is min b'she'enu minay, so the fact that you may have a roif of non-chametz, but you have something which is nice and tam, which is chametz. Other Rabbanim disagreed with him on this point, because they said alcohol is alcohol. And he said, no, how can you compare rye alcohol to corn alcohol? This was his argument, and again, I'm not here to paskin, but that was the way he paskin the shiloh.
Wasn't that kinyas?
Sorry?
Wasn't
yes.
That
it was kinyas, but there is no gzeira of chametz of kinyas of alav pesach. We say, you know, there's no iser. You have to remember, kinyas is a minute. It's an important minute.
For the Sephardim, right?
Sephardim don't have this minhag. We do have this minhag. We can't just, you know, ignore it. It's our minhag, and we have to keep it. At the same time, it doesn't create an issa deraisa. And there's nothing wrong with holding on to, if you have corn alcohol, your Smirnoff vodka, or your Tito's vodka, all the American vodkas are usually corn. I don't say all, but many are. If you want to keep that in your house on Pesach, by all means. You're not sure, you know, yourself, excel it with the chametz. But this is the way that would be. Okay. Now, one of the things that happened in the industry that's been very helpful to us is mergers and acquisitions. So why does that help us? Because it used to be that you had this distillery owned by this family, and you had this distillery owned by that family. What happened is today, these companies are all, Diageo is the largest liquor, wine, beer company in the world. And they have a tremendous market share. And many of the famous liquors that you're familiar with are really owned by Diageo, and it's a publicly traded company. And like Rav Moshe writes, even if you own shares in Diageo, which many people do perhaps, knowingly or otherwise, it's not really your chametz. You know, basically, stocks is like gambling. It's not your chametz. If you show up at Diageo and say, you know, here I have 50 stocks shares of Diageo, I would like to pick up a bottle of J&B. They're going to laugh at you, and they're going to throw you out. Because, yes, you bet on the company to do well or not to do well, to have dividends or not to have dividends, but it's not your company. So publicly traded companies is not a concern for Hamashal Pesach, and other companies, for example, Pernod Ricard is number two. Number three is Beam Suntory. You see some of the major, major brands of schnapps, which are chametz, are owned by goyim. Now, it's also true that a lot of Yidden are in the business. in the distribution business. But it's so hard to know, you know, the store that sells it, maybe you want to go to a store that has a mechiras balance. But exactly who's between, how many middlemen are in the middle, and who potentially owned it on, that's a suffix, and it's a very hard suffix to make a determination on. So if you're talking about groceries, and you're talking about, you know, waiting till they always say, wait till after Lag BaOmer, and you're good to go. But that doesn't help you for liquor, because there's some quick-moving liquors, and there are some very slow-moving liquors. And there are liquors that should be on a store shelf for 5 years. So it doesn't really help you. When it comes to, there are two very large companies that make bourbon. One is called Heaven Hill Brands. It's owned by the Shapiro family, and not a religious Jew, but he's been making Mechiras Chametz for the last 20 plus years. And there's another company called Sazerac, also owned by a Jew, which has not been making Mechiras. And basically, it was the Sazerac products that all made that list of to avoid. Both being machmer like Rabelsky, and number two, because now I think recently the CRC in Chicago started to give hashgacha on like one or two of their products where they made sure that mechiras chametz had taken, but maybe today they are making mechiras chametz. The problem is that again, schnapps can be 20 years old, 15 years old. So the older the better, right? If it's that old, so you can start making the mechira now, it's not going to help you for schnapps that's already before. Just some general rules. Again, I'm not saying, you know, vodka, which is flavored, the standard, people, you're drinking soda, bottled soda. Would you buy a bottle of soda without a hechsher? In Europe, maybe, but here, not. Because its flavors, is it treif? It's probably not treif, but flavored products, we buy with a hechsher. So if it's a flavored vodka, it should have a hechsher. If it's a flavored rum, liqueurs must have a hechsher. Because in addition to everything else, the liqueur has alcohol mixed with things. What's the source of that alcohol? That alcohol could be dairy, potentially, although not likely, but it more likely could be grape based. It's common today that many of the fancy liqueurs are actually based on an alcohol which is grape. So unless you know that it has a hechsher, liqueurs, that's the sweet, what they call Vada Shibola, right? That has to have a hechsher. Brandy, of course, must have a hechsher, because brandy is based on wine. So it must have a hechsher. Beer, which is flavored, which today is very common, because so many of the beers today do have additional flavors. There are many beers with a hechsher, not all. Well, brandy is cognac. Cognac is a region of France. So the comes from that region of France can be called cognac. Otherwise, it's just simple pashut to brandy. But brandy. Now the question is, what about the other stuff? The vodka, which is not flavored. So unless it's a Ciroc. Standard, let's say you have your standard vodkas, typically are made from grain. It's really not, I mean, again, is it better to buy with a hechsher? I'll tell you manoy. Rum, which is not flavored, is made from cane sugar. A bourbon, American whiskeys, again, outside of the issue we discussed about chametz, again, there's not really a kashrus. Tequila, although they've started recently tequila to, you know, even bourbons, they start to age them in all kinds of, you know, casks and different things, maybe wine casks, we'll get to that very briefly. And then we have, let's say, beer, which is unflavored, with the typically we say beer which is unflavored. Doesn't need a hechsher, although, like I said, there are many very interesting things coming to market these days. So Sam Adams, I think, has a hechsher, has a star can. Coors has the OU. I mean, again, there are beers with a hechsher, but again, you know, there are some shilas that come up. Sometimes they use as a filtering aid, use like gelatin, or it's from sturgeon, from a fish. They use the gelatin that comes from that as a filtering aid for beer. That's also perhaps a reason to be makel, because it doesn't stay in the product, just as a filter, and then it leaves the product. That was commonly used, even like Yehuda talks about it. So it's obviously been done for a long time.
What about the
Serrano? The Serrano is liqueur.
So that liqueur
needs a hechsher, and it has a hechsher. Yeah. Amaretto di Serrano has a hechsher. You know, again, you have to know which ones do and which ones don't.
Scotch.
Now, this is a famous tshuva for Moshe. Now, we're talking about, let's say, Scotch or Irish, and it's whiskeys, but it's many. It's even tequilas today. They're playing around. age, you know, it's one of the things that give the flavor, the unique flavor, obviously is the source material, the grain that you made it from, or whether it's the, you know, tequila, the agave that you made it from. But by putting it after you made it, if you would take bourbon, which is fresh, right after fermentation, you wouldn't want to put it in your mouth. It's disgusting. But if you put it into a barrel, into a wood barrel.
Moonshine.
What?
Moonshine. Uncut.
Yeah, the moonshine, yeah. Whiskey, which is not, it's not very tasty. You know, some people are desperate, but it's not tasty. But you want to age it for a period of time. Now, today, very commonly, they'll use things like sherry casks, they'll use port casks, they'll use other wine casks to age it. Now, Rav Moshe wasn't even discussing that shot. Rav Moshe is discussing a shot like this. There were blended Canadian whiskeys, which that actually had some wine added to it. But it was a small amount of wine. Now, typically we say that when is there bittel? If you have 1 in 60, right? That's when bittel takes place. But there's an interesting kula which you have for wine. 1 in 6. You don't need 60. Why? Because it's not a factor of taste. Usually we have the isser. You have, let's say, meat or chicken or whatever it is. As long as it gives flavor into the food that you put it into, you have a problem. But wine, we say like this, because you have to remember, wine is only Asur Midrabbanan. They say like this, if it's considered like wine, so then it's Asur. If it loses its shame of being wine, now, what do Chazal say? Yezigas HaKais. Remember, non-Chazal, they didn't drink wine straight. They used to pour water into it. Typically, it was 1 to 4. But Chazal say that even 1 to 6 is still considered wine. So if you have 1 in 6, that's considered wine. But if once it's 1 in 7, it's not wine. If it's not wine, it's bakul. So Rav Moshe says like this. He says, and this is sort of like, it goes against everything we know about chumras. It really just, Rav Moshe got it all wrong when it comes to chumras. Now, usually, if I have a chumra, right? So what do? I have to make sure that everybody's aware of that chumra, right? You have to flaunt it, you know, otherwise, and I have to distinguish myself, right? If someone is more machmer than me, he's a fanatic. If he's less machmer than me, he's a shaykhitz, right? I mean, that's typically, that's how we deal with these things. But Ramesh said like this, I normally am machmer, not to be samech an bittel echad b'sheish. That's my personal opinion. However, if I come into shul, there's a kiddush, and there's a simcha, and someone wants me to say l'chaim, I will forego my chumrah and I'll drink the schnapps. So as not to distinguish myself from the other people. So Rav Moshe had it all wrong with chumrah. I mean, but anyway, that's what Rav Moshe says. But that's halacha. It's halacha concept. So many would say like this. The fact that you have this schnapps, which is aged in a barrel, but you're really going to say that there's, even if it imparts some of the flavor from the wine that was there previously, is it going to be more than 1 in 6? Not likely. So therefore there would be bittel. That's why many people say, I don't care if it's sherry, I don't care if it's port, I don't care what it is. I'm drinking my schnapps. And that's one of the challenges I have, is when I try to convince the whiskey makers to get a hechsher, they say, why would I get a hechsher? Some of my best customers are in the Five Towns and in Brooklyn, and they all want the sherry. They want it. But again, I'm not going to tell you that it's usher. I'll be pashtus, it's mutter. But I'll give you some reasons why you would want to be machmer, perhaps. I'm not telling you people to be machmer. I'm just going to tell you, so I lay out the facts. So this is Rav Moshe's tshuva. So there's another kula, interesting kula. Stam Yayin, the Shulchan Aruch says, doesn't go throughout the entire keli. We only say Aser is only kedeit klipa. That means it's only the surface that it comes into contact with, only that surface itself. So therefore, if I take my schnapps and I put it into a barrel which held sherry before, which has blias, I only have to be chayshish, not for the entire thickness of the barrel, I only have to be chayshish for a very slight klipa, a very slight skin of that. So then I probably have shishim even. I don't even need the shisha. So that's another reason to make. Although the shach is machmer, when you have kavush, which you certainly have over there, the shach is machmer, I'll be pashtus, the normative halacha would follow the Shulchan Aruch, is that's another reason to be mekel. However, if you want to be machmer, I'll give you another reason to be machmer. The typical casks that are used for schnapps are not standard wine casks. They are fortified wines. Now, there are, it's not so popular today, but if you ever drink sherry or ports, there's not that much available of it. Those are typically are like 20% alcohol, 18, 19%. How do they get that? Because what they do is they take the wine and they add alcohol to it. So someone argue and say like this, when do I say Kidei Klipa? When do I say Bitul B'Sheish? That's when you deal with the standard wine. But Mehecha Teisi, that it applies even to a fortified wine. So someone argues. So again, that's why I say, I usually recommend in Shul, for example, I say, you're making a Kiddush, I have no objection, you want to bring something which doesn't, you know, have a Hechsher, or has Sherry or that. But at least bring one bottle that has a Hechsher, so that if someone there doesn't want to be like Ramesha, so he has what to drink by the Kiddush. Again, it's a recommendation. I'm not telling everybody that that's what they should do. I'm not telling people they have to avoid the schnapps, and certainly I don't think it's appropriate to criticize someone who is mekel. They have certainly what to rely on. At the same time, there are some people who want to be machmer. They don't need to have the, you know, the Glenlivet, you know, 18 whatever it is year old. You know, they say a guy once walked into a shul, and he came for a bar mitzvah, and the Baruch Simcha was standing there with a bottle of some, you know, 18, 21, whatever it is. And he comes over to the Baal Simcha, he says to him, Mazel Tov, he says, it's such a simcha to see your son. I remember when he was born, and now he's 13 years old. So the Baal Simcha says, he's only 13. This is 21 years old. Again, when it comes to schnapps, when we schmooze about booze, you know, I think it's important to just put it into perspective. It's, God's fine, we make a simcha, we want to share the simcha with other people, we want to say l'chaim, they say it's a gewaldig gezach to say l'chaim, could wish brachas over schnapps. But let's take it into, you know, let's not get carried away by it, and certainly not carried away in the sense of getting the tipsy. Shabbos is not the time to get tipsy, a little bit brings a little bit simcha, a lot sometimes diminishes the simcha. So yishkoach for listening, and Ritz Hashem, we should...